Wintrust Business Lunch. The latest job report showed that the job growth was actually slowed down. Fewer jobs out there. Jane Oates joins us now, senior policy advisor and recent president over at Working Nation, a frequent guest on our show. Jane, you're back on WGN.
Hi, John. Great to be with you.
You say the slowdown in job growth is a warning sign. What's your concern?
Well, I think, 7.5 million open jobs is the lowest we've been in years. And at the same time, looking at this week's JOLTS, the jobs openings and labor turnovers report that BLS does, we saw that, the job openings aren't there. People aren't moving. And quite frankly, employers look pretty happy with what they have. They're not doing crazy hiring. Today's numbers tell us the same thing. I mean, we have the high performers, the sectors like healthcare. But healthcare added 44,000 jobs, which is well below its monthly average in 2024. And, of course, the other big performer is government. And right now, government jobs are, like, up in the air, right? We all have a big question about what's going to happen with those. So those are my that brings me, like, real concern.
Yeah, I noticed the number for government hires was, I think, 32,000. Was that the number I saw?
32,000, yes.
And I believe the administration says they've actually got more federal employees to take the buyout. I don't know if those numbers have any sort of intersection. I don't know if one relates to the other. But the slowdown, you said, in job growth is a warning sign, and that workers are staying put. Not because they're thriving, but because better opportunities are shrinking. Talk a little bit more about that point.
So, I mean, you look at the private sector, the information that's publicly available, Amazon is letting go of a lot of its middle managers. So when an employer that size in the private sector sends a message that we don't need middle managers the way we did at one time, you have to worry that other people will follow suit. And again, those are really good jobs. And good jobs that are going to be hard to find right now. I mean, middle management is shrinking, and those people enjoy great jobs with benefits in most places. And now, where are they going to find them next? So it's a time of high anxiety. And by the way, what the government has announced, whether it's the early retirement benefit that has been announced for people, we don't know what those numbers are yet. Or the announcement today, of up to 10,000 people being laid off at USAID, those won't be reflected, certainly in January's numbers, maybe not in February's numbers either, because they may get severance and time to buy out. So we'll see that happening, later in the year. What we will see, I think, immediately in February, the federal government has suspended a lot of spending on grants. So, John, you are so good with nonprofits in the Chicagoland area. Nonprofits operate on a shoestring budget. So if they're not allowed to pull down any more money from their federal grant, they're going to have to let people go. And we will definitely see that, in the February numbers.
Yeah, that's interesting. If we do slash the labor force, USA, Department of Education, everybody else, FBI, those people, will they be counted as unemployed then? Will that be an uptick in unemployment numbers?
That certainly will. They'll be laid off. Federal workers are entitled to unemployment insurance, so each of the states will see that. And, the common misperception is that those federal government jobs are in the Washington, D.C. area. I think you and I have talked about this in the past. Over 70%, somewhere between 70 and 75% of all federal jobs are in other states other than Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
So this is going to be felt everywhere.
Just mentioning USAID, I also saw an interesting note about how that money gets spent. When USAID delivers food to other parts of the world, the food is purchased in America by American companies, and it's shipped on almost always American ships. So a lot of that money is spent domestically. It sounds like foreign aid, but it almost always goes to NGOs, and the food purchases and equipment supplies are purchased in the USA, and then delivered to other places. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're talking to Jane Oates, the Senior Policy Advisor, the recent president at Working Nation. The website's workingnation.com. Jane, you were talking about the pinch for the labor market, particularly in middle management levels. Why is it that those jobs are being eliminated? It seems like the economy is doing relatively well. People are still spending money. Why is there this labor slowdown?
You know, I think employers are being cautious. But I think the particular thing with middle management is they think that they can eliminate a layer. It's going to remain to be seen. You know, does upper management take control, or do they let people go less managed? Because certainly the productivity numbers in all sectors was up, you know, for 2024. Maybe they think people don't need as much guidance. And, boy, I think that's a mistake, because you and I both, we experience every day the rapidity of change, you know, how technology is changing the way we do our day-to-day work, first of all, but our day-to-day activities. More people are doing things online today, whether it's shopping or banking, than ever before. So I'm not sure that we don't need middle managers to make sure that the professional development for their people that they manage is really keeping them current and giving them the skills they need.
Our next guest is going to talk about...
I disagree on that. Yeah.
Well, our next guest is going to talk about DeepSeek. I wonder to what degree some of this thinning of management ranks is because of artificial intelligence.
Oh, that's a good question to ask him, John, or her.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have an answer to that off the top of your head.
I don't have an answer. I mean, I just think that, you know, if you think about who's managed at places, it's people who do, you know, direct customer service. It's people who do production management. I mean, I think a human is going to have to be involved in that. But as I said before, I think the most important part of having a manager is having them there to help you navigate what you have to do to keep your skills current for the needs of the job today and tomorrow.
You and I often talk about the trade skills, trade jobs. What's the latest on that?
Well, you know, construction didn't do very well. Construction and manufacturing were both flat for January. That's depressing. You know, I'm a big blue-collar person. I believe that those blue-collar jobs really help build community wealth as well as family and personal wealth. So I'm nervous about that. But, you know, this idea of skills used to be just a blue collar thing. It's a white collar thing now. I mean, you need your next guest is going to talk about AI. You need to make sure people know how to use AI, how to fact check, you know, how to make sure that the AI is giving them accurate information in a language that people can understand. So I think that, you know, skills and that concept of skills is now in every job that I can think of.
This is a little more, I don't want to say pessimistic, but you're a little more cautious than you usually are with us. It's interesting that the markets, though, do seem to be doing pretty well. You know, we had that 600-point drop when Donald Trump announced a trade war with Canada, and then the markets in the world realized that wasn't a thing, and it all rebounded. And we do seem to be pretty stable. So I wonder if you take some consolation from that, or how do you explain that? The markets seem to be okay with what's happening.
Yeah, the markets have been inexplicable to me for this last several years, right? And I think the dip, the dramatic dip that had people really nervous, particularly nervous about short selling, you know, they were really nervous on Monday, but then it zipped right back. Will that happen again if in 30 days the administration decides they're going to reinstate the tariffs against Canada and Mexico and expand them? I don't know. I mean, the market is really, I'm so glad I worry about labor market and not the stock market, because I think it's completely unpredictable.
Well, you are at least addressing one thing that I haven't heard talked about a lot, and that is if we do slash significantly the federal payroll, and everybody, I'll say this, maybe it's not true. I think everybody thinks the federal payroll needs to be slashed, and it can be slashed a lot. We just need to be smart about it, and that's a whole nother conversation. But if we do that, then what happens to the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who are now out of work? And maybe one is a price to pay for the other. Like, okay, we're going to have more unemployed people, and that's going to be an increase in unemployment, but better that than the excessive spending that we have. We just can't continue to do that. Anyway, I just wonder what the impact will be if some of these plans come to fruition.
Well, you know, John, I always think, again, I always remind you, I'm not a labor economist. I'm a people person. And I always think about the economy as a game of dominoes, that there is absolutely nothing that you can do in terms of economic policy that doesn't have an effect, just like dominoes dropping all over the place. So those federal workers, you know, if you don't know a federal worker, you might not care that they're getting laid off, but you might realize they are customers in your dry cleaners, in your restaurant, in, you know, in your gas station. They're spending money every day. And if they no longer have money to spend, then that's going to have that domino effect, just the same way as I was saying it about the nonprofits. You know, I mean, if the nonprofits close, who's going to take care of things? Who's going to train people? Who's going to do the food bank? I think those are things. When people think about a bloated federal government, and I never want to defend the amount we spend in the federal government, especially when people come out with big stories, but don't forget that it definitely impacts you. It will impact you wherever you are.
Just one other paragraph here from the story I've been reading. Federal Reserve officials are watching the numbers closely as they contemplate their next monetary policy moves. The Fed has cut its benchmark rate by a full percentage point. In the latter part of 2024, policymakers of late have been advocating a more cautious pace ahead as they evaluate policy ramifications. Remember, there was talk about 3, 4, 5 rate cuts. Now it's 0, 1, 2. I don't even hear people say 3 rate cuts going forward this year.
Yeah, I think that's a big topic of conversation. You know, I was just at a conference and there were people there bemoaning the fact that there may be no more rate cuts this year. And other people were like running out of the room with their hair on fire.
Well, let's not do that. Jane, let's connect again. Jane Oates, Senior Policy Advisor, WorkingNation.com. Nice to talk to you, Jane.
John, great talking to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's get now to Philip Shoemaker. He is the founder of the Apple App Store. He's currently the founder of something called Identity.com. Philip, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
First, just tell me who you were and then who you are. Apple App Store founder. What does that mean?
Well, it means that Apple brought me in to formalize the process to help developers get their apps onto the store, which meant I had to write all those silly rules that said, you can show this, you can't do that, you can, app developers can do X, they can't do Y. And so we were pretty much the police force to ensure that only good apps, safe apps, got onto the App Store. So we didn't, there was no fraud going after our users, there were no problems with our customers.
Not to dwell on that, but how do you feel that aspect of the App Store is being handled now?
You know, I think they're doing as well of a job as they can. Right. There's a lot of pushback from governments about what they should and shouldn't be able to do. But Apple's always maintained a line. It's like, we're going to set the rules for our App Store. And they've enforced that throughout the world. And they've been pretty good at doing that. There's been no regulations attacking them, except recently with regards to one issue, which is payment. Right. Apple wants their 30% for hosting your app in the store. They want 30% of your action. So it's hard to argue with that because it is their store, but at the same time, 30% is just a heavy hand.
And this wasn't your area, but you don't think that it's anti-competitive, that it, the idea that it would be proprietary isn't something that the government should regulate too much?
Well, I think one of the issues that people have is that they can't get, sometimes they just can't get the apps they want into the App Store for their users. And sure, Apple is very slow at making changes to the App Store, but they do make changes over time. To be honest, I think the App Store itself should be a process where developers and Apple come together and discuss and make new features happen in the App Store and allow new types of apps. But Apple is reticent at giving away control of that. So sure, there's a little bit of anti-competitive nature there. Because the store is so old now, right? It's over 15 years old now. So it's something that needs to change, and I think Apple could use some help.
I don't know if 15 years is a long time or a short time. That's interesting. We've had it for 15 years. And so you leave there, and now you are the founder of something called Identity.com. What does that do?
Yes. Identity.com is what we call a decentralized identity company. And for the layman, or just to simplify it, it means that rather than, you know, when you go onto websites and others, they want information about your identity, who you are. Sometimes you even have to do a document scan where you scan your driver's license. We take that all out of the picture and say, you scan that driver's license and put it on your phone, and then you only disclose with people what information you want to disclose with them. You should not have to document scan your driver's license over and over and over again, which we see online people are doing. So we are creating an identity solution that you control, you hold the keys to, and nobody else has access to it unless you grant them access to little pieces of that data. Data, these things are called honeypots, and we see with Equifax, we see with Marriott, we see with all these different companies getting hacked and our identifying information gets out there. We try to prevent that by having you be in control of that information and put an end to honeypots in general.
There's concern that DeepSeek will have access to more information about me than even TikTok would. How concerned should I be about that?
Well, look, I think every AI system has the ability to figure out a lot about you. Look at Apple Intelligence. I'm speaking right now on an Apple phone, and Apple Intelligence is running in the background, learning everything I do and everything about my information. And that should strike a little bit of fear in everybody. Because we don't want to give these AI systems too much information about us because they have to store that data somewhere. And if that data gets stored somewhere not on your phone, people might have access to it. Now, with DeepSeek, you know, some what's great about DeepSeek is it's open source, which means experts can get in there and look at their source code. And if there's anything bad going on, they can point it out. And guess what? They found some stuff, right? Some information can't get sent back to China Mobile. And China Mobile, as we know, is a state-owned company. So that sounds pretty scary. So what people need to do is they need to take the DeepSeek source code, remove that code, and rebuild it. Now, it's not something you and I can do, but third parties that are technically savvy can do that.
I've heard it said that since they told everybody, here's how we built it, and you can manipulate it any way you want, that the world's going to either have this or use this, and it doesn't make any sense for the United States to ban it. What's your thought about that?
Well, look, this gets us along the lines of the same thing that's going on with the TikTok ban, and I think that is a scary precedent to set. But look what we did with Huawei, right? People didn't believe that Huawei's routers were sending information back to the CCP, but in doing some research, it found that perhaps it was. So for me, I think DeepSeek should not be banned in the U.S. in general. But look, on critical phones, security-conscious phones, government phones, et cetera, probably there should be a ban there because we don't know what we don't know. And although the source is, quote, open source, did they open source every aspect of what you run when you go online and use DeepSeek? It doesn't necessarily mean that they've disclosed everything. If you rebuild it from scratch, yes, you will know it works the way it says. But what we access when we just go into the web, we don't know what's really running behind the scenes. So for me, that makes me a little scared about using it in general for certain phones. For me, I have no problem doing a lot of research on it. I know that anything I disclose might be disclosed to the CCP. But look, I'm not going to ask it private questions that I don't. That I'm afraid of getting out there.
What does it say about the artificial intelligence industry or NVIDIA that makes the chips or the servers that host the information? If this little company I never heard of from China can do it so inexpensively and efficiently, does this say that the United States has been doing it wrong? Does it jeopardize some of the big players out there? What does it mean?
Well, this is a standard tech play. So what we've seen in the tech industry in general is that we are all standing on the backs of giants, right? If you look at Apple's amazing user interface and all those features they have there, that was stolen from Xerox PARC from the 70s, right? So a lot of this, and Apple admits that, right? Steve admits that people, smart people steal ideas. And so that's basically what happened. So what DeepSeek did is they've been able to train this system by doing a few things. And one is that's distilling the information that OpenAI has already created. So they've essentially taken information and the data, the training data from OpenAI directly through distilling their models. Now, is that illegal? Is that IP problems? I don't know, right? I'm no expert in that space, but this is what the tech industry has done for years. Where did OpenAI get this data to train their systems on in the first place? From you and me and everybody else on the internet. So this is par for the course. But I do want to point out that while DeepSeek said that it cost them $5.6 million, it used hardly any of NVIDIA processors, blah, 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 and the market really had an issue with that. It's not true, right? They did spend over $1.5 billion in training, in R&D, in buying processors and creating clusters. So, you know, everybody tries to frame a narrative in a way that makes DeepSeek look like they've been able to achieve so much. But they did they are standing on the backs of giants. They will continue to do improvements to the models and improve upon the way companies like OpenAI and Anthropic do things. And I think we are in the beginning of an arms race for AI, and the country that has the best AI might end up ruling.
So do you think the U.S. is positioned well in that?
We're extremely positioned well, and especially with the new crypto AI czar, David Sacks. David is very concerned about keeping this in-house, about investing as much money as we can into this industry so the U.S. can continue to dominate in this space. They do in AI right now. DeepSeek is interesting, but there are other companies that we haven't heard of, companies like Numenta, that are doing some really radical things with regards to AI that I think, and Numenta is an AI company in the Bay Area, and we're going to see some significant improvements over the course of the next 5 years.
Hmm. Philip Shoemaker, we got to talk again. He's the founder of the Apple App Store, currently the founder of a firm he talked about at the beginning of this conversation called Identity.com. Thanks, Philip.
Thank you very much.
More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Another round of incentives are available in Illinois for electric vehicles. The latest round of incentives includes a $4,000 rebate per vehicle. Those funds are available as part of the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act of 2021. Applications are available through April 30th. There's about $14 million available during that window for about 3,500 EVs. Electric vehicle sales increased 7% nationwide last year, and Governor Pritzker has set a goal of 1 million EVs on Illinois roads by 2030. Cranes reports there were about 126,000 EVs on state roads as of mid-January. Chicago-based Levy has been contracted to revamp the food offerings at the Chicago Botanic Garden. The hospitality group will revamp the menu at Garden View Cafe first before moving on to other menus. The company has been tasked with creating menus inspired by the surrounding scenery, with fish and salads among the expected menu highlights. Levy operates several restaurants in Chicago and runs food and beverage service at Wrigley Field, Soldier Field, United Center, and Raitt Field. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And on the phone is a member of a club that nobody wants to be in. David Grossman and his wife, Lauren, are in the club because of their daughter.
Hallie was a 25-year-old beautiful girl who wanted to go to med school. She was brilliant. She was silly. She loved helping others.
And everything was going great for Hallie.
She was working for Northwestern Hospital in the ER. It's her dream job.
And then, well,
she got diagnosed with a large tumor above her left kidney.
And just under a year later, she died.
And shortly thereafter, we put together this foundation called Hallie 225. Hallie was born on February 25th at 2:25 p.m., and she lived to 25.
The Grossmans are about to celebrate what would have been Hallie's 27th birthday by asking you to do a good deed in her memory and have a chance to win free hamburgers for a year from Epic Burger, where David is the CEO. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Hallie Grossman's family and foundation are asking you to do what she did.
She loved helping the underdog, you know, needed help or who needed some medical attention or who needed some help paying some bills. She found those people.
And now it's your turn to find them.
Perform an act of kindness. I don't care what it is. From February 14th until February 25th, till Hallie's birthday.
Post a picture or a video of your good deed.
You can tag the Epic Burger, tag the Hallie 225 Foundation, or even just send us an email.
And besides just feeling good about yourself, there may be a reward.
So do something great, and then we're going to pick 11 winners. Free Epic Burger for a year.
And even if you don't win the big prizes?
Hallie's birthday on February 25th, all 11 Epic locations are going to be serving $2.25 hamburgers.
All to raise money for Hallie's Foundation. Find out more at Hallie225.org. On our food calendar, it's National Fettuccine Alfredo Day, and Sunday is National Pizza Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Last couple of minutes here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We want to catch you up on some of the programming at the Facets Film Forum. The executive director is Karen Cardarelli. Karen, how are you?
You got it. I'm good, thank you.
Tell us what Facets is.
Facets is one of Chicago's largest nonprofit art house cinemas and a media education center.
You've got some programming coming up in March, right?
That's right. Certainly this month we're kicking things off with our 50th anniversary first event, which is Beyond the Red Carpet, which goes into all things Oscars, the politics, and, you know, our predictions, what's going to happen. And we're going to have a special guest of one of the Oscar nominees, Greg Quaidar of Sing Sing. So that's February. And then March, in addition to our regular monthly film series, we'll be launching another anniversary series, which I think is what you're referring to, Chicago on Screen, where we'll be celebrating the film Fugitive. We want to celebrate films that were shot in Chicago, starting with The Fugitive, and we're bringing in the crew that made it happen and hear their stories, you know, their war stories of how they actually did it.
Hmm. How do people interact with you all then? Do they go to venues? Is this online? What can you do for the listeners?
Yeah, so Facets Film Forum is located at 1517 West Fullerton. We're in Lincoln Park. We're an art house. We have an art house cinema, so we have monthly film series. We show new release independent films. We're about to start screening Anora and Sing Sing and Baby Girl. So you can catch the latest new indie films with us. We also have monthly screenings of from horror, like genre series, a horror series called Cold Sweat. We have a monthly anime club. So there's something for every film lover, I will say, at Facets. And really, we focus on films and film experiences that spark exciting conversation. You know, bold stories, bold filmmakers really can inspire great conversation. And that's what our mission is about.
What's a conversation that's happening out there right now?
Well, I'll tell you, starting tonight, we are partnering with Full Spectrum Features, and they are screening new films that are contemporary Irish trans films. It's called Hard Done By, Contemporary Irish Trans Films, and it's sold out. We just added a second screening, and so, you know, I think that tells you right there that there's a group that wants to celebrate that and talk about that, and that's a great example of what's happening tonight.
Sounds like you guys are interested in smaller projects, ones that maybe we haven't heard about, and then big ones, too, things that would be nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, when your focus is lifting up those bold new voices, those bold filmmakers, I think you got to look at both ends of that spectrum. You know, the new indie filmmaker in Chicago is full of some really important filmmaking that's going on. And like you said, some of the larger well-known ones. You know, Facets, we're celebrating 50 years, John, and historically Facets has drawn luminaries like Werner Herzog, and Roger Ebert was a longtime friend of Facets, William Friedkin. And Roger famously called Facets the Temple of Great Cinema. And as we've been planning for our 50th, that was a vision that we really wanted to bring back and restore and bring forward the sanctuary for great films and brave conversations. So we take our inspiration from those early filmmakers.
Karen Cardarelli, Executive Director of Facets Film Forum. No more time today, but let's stay in touch on all of this, Karen.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
FACETS, facets.org.